There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, Chandler, you told me that you've already listened to the intro a couple times and you think you can figure out everybody in the intro. There's four of them. Can you name them?
Well, John Daly gives himself away, so it's nice of him to get us a free one.
And then just get a little closer to the mic, or you can pull it towards you. That's what Andy does.
Yeah.
So one, that's one.
So Bryson and... with the driver sucks right now.
Yeah, that's the one people don't get. So you're hot. That's two.
Well, he got himself into trouble with Cobra on that one.
Yeah, you know? And he's no longer. What's he playing? Is he playing the crank driver?
Oh yeah, he's got his own thing now, right? I'm surprised it's not called the Bryson driver. No, the first and the third one I won't get, but Bryson was great.
First one's Bob Does Sports. I feel like he was kind of one of the first golf podcast personality people, and the third's Bruce Buffer.
Is that Bob Menifee?
Bob Does Sports? No, his name is like Robbie Berger. He's a younger dude, maybe early 30s, not very good at golf, but I think he's a Callaway athlete now.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So just the Bob Does Sports bit. And
okay.
It's pretty good. And then, yeah, Bruce Buffer, the UFC announcer.
Got it.
Who, I mean, they're all on Cameo, but Bruce, he's like kind of famous for doing people's like newborn childs. And he'll like read off their, you know, height, weight, all
now
that
we're
stuff.
Entering the world.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Nice.
Thank you for coming out, by the way. It's always fun to actually do pods in person. You know, nowadays it's a lot of virtual stuff, but you're here, so that's sweet.
You got a great setup here. I want to move in here and spend the winter here.
I could start charging rent. In this economy, I'm happy to charge you a couple $100 a month if you want to move in the garage of the studio. Yeah.
Tempting.
Chandler, how do I say your last name? Is it Withington?
You got it. Just the way it looks.
Exactly.
On paper.
Wow. Yeah. Chandler Withington.
That's it.
Why don't you tell the audience a little about yourself and we'll just rip into it, because we probably already spent like 10 minutes before we sat down here. So
great. Well, thanks for having me on. I'm a local. I live around the corner in Victoria. My family and I have a wife and three daughters, 12, 8, and 5.
Congratulations.
So I'm in it right now. I know all the lyrics to every Taylor Swift song. We live around the corner of Victoria. We've been here since early January 2013.
Okay.
And had a change in my career a couple of years ago, which I know we'll talk about, but it's the job that brought me out here to Minnesota. I was in Philadelphia before we get out here as an assistant golf pro, and got to the top of the hill and becoming the pro at Hazeltine at the end of 2012, and I was there from 13 to 21.
Wow. So you've seen a lot at Hazeltine then, because... I don't know a ton about Hazeltine other than, you know, they've hosted the Ryder Cup. They're going to be hosting another one. But didn't they go through some, like, renovations probably right before that? So you went through the renovation stage. You went through hosting a Ryder Cup. Like, what was that like? And, you know, we'll get into what you do now, but it'd be awesome just to hear. I mean, like you said, if you're at the top there, you're the pro of Hazeltine, a course like that with the name and reputation. I mean, what's that day-to-day like? What's that come with?
So I actually showed up right after all that coursework, the clubhouse work. I never saw the old clubhouse.
Same.
I saw the old Metrodome right before they tore it down. It's one of those things where I wish I'd seen it once just to appreciate what it was. Hazeltine had just turned 50 years old in the fall of 12 when I was interviewing. So they had done the clubhouse work, golf course work, greens, you know, fairways. They got to the bunkers a couple years later, but it was all to get ready for Ryder Cup. And just the logistics of hosting an event like that. I mean, the old clubhouse would have never held up, and the greens needed some help. And then, you know, I remember you even had like the water tower when I first got into town behind the 10th
tee. The one right behind the Cub Foods or the Target or
yeah. Well, there's a water tower right behind the 10th tee when I got there. So when I showed up, the club was already full swing preparing for the Ryder Cup. It was 4 years away. And I was just trying to understand the club culture and who they were and where they were going. But the mission statement that I walked into and still exists today was they wanted to host majors. You know, from their founder was a guy named Todd Heffelfinger, former USGA president, whose vision was to bring championship golf back to the state of Minnesota. So that's when they just went so far outside the city and had that land grab that now is such an asset for them.
Yeah, I played there twice last year, once in the MAC Cup, and I noticed that it seems like there's new condos and new buildings and just new everything, even behind the range, just going up, preparing for the next Ryder Cup, which is 2028?
29 now. COVID.
Oh, because of the COVID year. Yeah. Wow, 2029. So we're going to be on odd years. That's interesting. Moving forward. Okay, 2029.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of a sudden now Chaska is becoming a town, right? You've got a Costco going in, you know, just down the road.
Which I am absolutely thrilled about, by the way. So we don't have to go all the way out to Eden Prairie. I'm pretty excited, and so is my fiance. So
yeah, we think about where Hazeltine was when they started, you know, in early the 60s. When they first opened in 62, people were coming from Edina and Eden Prairie were like the next closest town. And you get these, I was talking to Jim Beck, who's one of the first staff members there, longest time member, you know, over 50 years now. He was talking about how people would just, they would get out there and they'd be like, where are we? I mean, you didn't have...
Middle of nowhere.
Which one came second? I think it was 212. Highway 5 was there originally, but 212 didn't exist, I think, until 2002 or 9. But people would get out to Hazeltine, they'd be like, we're never coming back out here. It's so far removed from reality. You know, 50 years later now, everything's being built around it. So it's not a secret that land is...
Yeah, it's what, 20 minutes from the airport, if that?
30 tops.
Yeah, 30 tops. Yeah, I guess I can make it in 20. Here's 494 to 7. I don't know how much further it is going. 494 to 5, or like you said, 212. But yeah. So then in your journey, so you left Hazeltine in 2016?
2021, just 2 years
2021. What am I saying? I don't even know where 2016 came from.
That's Ryder Cup. It's that year.
Is that what it was? Yeah, the Ryder Cup from 2016. I just can't get it out of my head. Yeah. So 2021, you left Hazeltine. And I read the article about kind of getting into golf and art. I mean, and I also saw in the article that, you know, you're, I don't want to say obsessive over the Ryder Cup, but you love the Ryder Cup, and who doesn't? But, I mean, how difficult is it to make that type of decision, right? When you're at a place like that, the name, the Ryder Cup, everything that comes with it, being, you know, going to be hosting another one, and doing what you're doing now, right? Like, that's going to be a hard kind of life decision. And maybe it's not, but I'd be interested to hear, you know, how you dealt with that, or how you decided to do it in the first place.
Yeah, I think it was a decision that my family and I made slowly over 3 years until it just got to a place where, like, this is the route we need to go. So I think what started that, Jordan, was 2018. I'm kind of right where I want to be. I'm in a sweet spot in my life. You know, we had two kids at the time. We just went through a really successful Ryder Cup. They've told us that another one is going to come back in 2028. So the chance to do it again. And then, you know, there were other events on the horizon. We had a U.S. Junior Amateur in 2020, which we didn't get to play because of COVID. The U.S. Amateur was going to come back. You know, now they've added another women's KPMG. We had the women's KPMG there in 2019. So amongst the day-to-day life of being the pro at Hazeltine, we had these championships coming through, you know, which kept everyone on their toes. And I was right where I wanted to be. We had our third kid, third daughter, Charlotte, in the fall of 2018.
So you have three girls?
Yes.
Girl dad.
Yep.
Hashtag girl dad.
Proud girl dad. So Charlotte shows up in October of 2018, and everything went smooth with the delivery. Our middle, Bryn, had a little bit of a heart issue when she was born, had to go to Children's. Everything's fine. So we were already aware of how delicate, you know, delivering a child can be. Everything went smooth with Charlotte. When we were driving home, my wife, Maureen, was just kind of saying, look, my chest feels tight. Something feels off. I've
done this twice. This is something, something's a little.
Yeah, we just thought maybe it was overexertion of getting out of bed. You know, I've never delivered a kid, but I can only imagine. So we get home and I'm like, just take it easy. And she's still like, something's off. And you know, so she called her doctor and they said, just go around the corner to 212 to the emergency room and they'll run some tests and you'll have peace of mind and you'll go home. You know, thankfully she listened to her gut on this. It's kind of like when it's not the same, but when we get up on a par five, it's like, do we go for it or will we lay up? And your gut usually tells you what's the right play.
Yeah. Only you know your body and what you're feeling, right? Yeah.
So we went to 212. They ran some tests. They came back pretty quick. And, you know, doctor's got this look on his face. He goes, you've got a blood clot in your lung, to my wife. And that's I never heard the words pulmonary embolism before.
Me neither.
Yeah. I was like, is this, it's like, oh yeah, she's, we're rushing her to Abbott right now.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, so all of a sudden it's things are changing quickly. And so I get in the car with our three-day-old daughter, Charlotte, and I start driving to Abbott. And you know, I'm going down 62, and you know, hear an ambulance coming behind you. It splits the highway in half, and she goes flying past you, and you wonder, you know, are we doing this alone? I'm looking at, you know, Charlotte, like, am I raising three kids on my own here?
Yeah.
Thankfully, they caught it when they did. They're able to treat it, and we were able to go home as a family a week later. But I think that was probably the start of the perspective of maybe what matters most.
Yeah.
I had watched a clip. It seems like the world kept sending me messages through different things, but I watched this clip of it was the motivational video that the Europeans used for the 2018 Ryder Cup. And it was three past players. It was Brian Huguet, Jose Maria Althabel, and Sam Torrance talking to the team. And Brian Huguet was talking about how, you know, like when you get to the end of this week, like don't have any regrets. Don't feel like you would have done more to help your team win, because come Sunday night, you either have won this thing or lost. Don't leave anything in the gas tank. And his last message of just having no regrets, I think is the start of when I started looking at my life and going like, you know, I spend so much time invested in this job. I've been doing it for decades now, and I've gotten to go through some really great things. You know, if she didn't make it, would I have regrets about what I've missed? So
yeah.
I think that started it for me. So we keep going a little further. I think in the summer of 21, when Charlotte was 2 years old, I'm at the job so much sometimes that with a young two-year-old, when she's, you know, goes to bed at 7 and doesn't wake up till 7, that there would sometimes be weeks that I wouldn't see her awake. And I remember she looked at me in that summer. She looked at me and she goes, "What are you doing in mommy's house?" She doesn't know who I am.
Wow.
So I think that and then a few other things. There's a few movies that summer, like, you know, Back to the Future. I would watch these movies with our kids. And like Back to the Future, you've got Marty McFly, you know, ends up back in 55, and he interrupts his family story, and he's trying to put it all back together because he's slowly getting erased from the picture. And I think I remember looking at my wife's Instagram, and you know, I was scrolling through it. I'm like, I'm in none of these. I'm not in the pictures.
Yeah, a lot of time and effort away from home.
It's her with the girls, and it's not me. So I think again, slowly, just my wife and I looking at it and going, "Is this us?" You know, for the next 10, 20 years of doing this job, and can we sustain, you know, the expectation that the club has, but then also, you know, my girls have expectations and hopes in my time, and can I balance them both? And I think what you just hit on as far as, was it a tough decision to leave? We got to go through a Ryder Cup, and a friend of mine just kind of said to me, he said out loud what I was already thinking. He goes, "Look, you went through a Ryder Cup with your hero, Davis Love, as the captain. You got to win. Like, your experience was a 15 out of 10. If you hang around for another 10 years, miss another 10 years of your kid's life, you know, our oldest daughter would be 18 in 2029. Like, you know, if I stay through another Ryder Cup, like, she'll be gone and I'll never get that back."
Yeah.
And he said, "Look, for you personally, you got a great experience on the Ryder Cup. You don't need to do it again." And I just came to peace with that of like, I've gotten to check off all these great boxes that I never thought I would check professionally. The last kind of horizon for me is like be a husband and father. So that's why we made that decision to leave in the fall of 21 was, you know, let's try to find something that allows me to be more available. And we didn't know what that was going to be. We wanted to give Hazeltine time to search for a new pro. They got a great pro named Kyle Brandt from San Francisco, and we needed to go kind of find our way. So that's where that really kind of started from, was, you know, the events, I think, going back to 2018 and what that brought to me as far as perspective of like, you know, what's important.
Yeah.
If things change tomorrow, am I going to have a regret?
It's always interesting. You know, I follow motivational stuff all over too. And like the one that always hits home is it says that you've already accomplished things you told yourself would make you happy. And then like, once you actually have that realization, you're like, what am I chasing or what am I doing? Right. Like whether it's work or, you know, fun or whatever it might be, it's like, you're already accomplishing the things you told yourself. Like, oh, if I just do this, like I'm there. And you just keep on doing it. And it never stops. So I get that.
That's what it was. Like it, if you have the perspective of going back to when you started whatever journey you're on, you know, I didn't grow up in a golf family. I didn't grow up playing the game. I didn't start playing until I was 14. You know, I just kind of accidentally fell into it. And I would have been happy to be the pro anywhere. you know, at a fixer upper or public golf course, and I ended up at these places that I got to end up. Like it was pinch myself so good type of luck that again, like when I was able to get to a place of peace of going, like I've gotten to do what I wanted to do. Now it's about, can we raise these girls together and can I be around them?
Yeah. Family and life stuff. So now you're doing it. Is it just solely artwork or like, what's the, I mean, how do you go? It almost seems like you, I don't want to say 180, but, and you took a little bit of, you know, golf and brought it into the artwork stuff, but those are two completely different things. I mean, was art always a passion or like a creative outlet or something that you just kind of had as a hobby, or was it just like, I just want to try something different and I like it. Like, how do you do that? How's it happen?
It wasn't planned. I don't think you say like, well, I'm going to just completely change lanes and do something completely different. If we had tried to plan it that way, it wouldn't have turned out the way that it has. Where it kind of came from, I go all the way back to asking a lot of people, I'd ask you, you know, do you remember like what your first dream was when they said you're growing up and they're like, Jordan, what are you dreaming of? What do you want to be?
Ask I honestly not. Don't.
Yeah.
So can.
For me, the first dream I think I remember having was being an architect. And my dad took me around the country to all these different baseball stadiums as a kid. From we would go to Houston to see the Astrodome, a dome stadium, to Candlestick Park, to Fenway, Wrigley, Dodger Stadium. We went up to Canada. We saw Sky Dome had just built this stadium with a hotel in center field. We saw Montreal, you know, had this retractable roof that didn't work. But I was so fascinated by how different all these stadiums were. And then they built Canman Yards, which was this throwback, which now everyone's doing. But I think my mindset was like, well, I want to be one of those stadium architects and engineers. And that was my mindset. I was doing all these engineering architecture classes in high school. And you meet with a guidance counselor and you know, she kind of says, all right, so what are you going to do? What are you going to go to college for? I said, well, I'm going to be an architect. And you know, I remember her kind of smiling at me and she's like, that's great. What else do you like to do? And it was kind of her very nice, I thought it was just tell me more about yourself type questions, but she was kind of saying like, you don't have near the grades to do any of that. So let's figure something else out.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And I was so ignorant about, you know, like what does college look like? I was a C+ student at best.
And dude, looking back, it's just such a life like thing to look back. I don't know if many people know in high school. Like I see 16, 17, 18 year olds today. And I'm like, if that's what I looked like in high school, I can't imagine trying to make decisions about what you want to do in life until you're a couple of years into college. You know, like that's just a tough thing in general. Just speaking on society,
it is.
If you will.
It is. I have a place in my heart for the daydreamers because that's who I was. I'd sit in class, just daydream and doodle. But I really cared about architecture class. So when she asked that question, I said, well, I'm starting to like golf. And she said, you know, can you have like a career in golf? And I just started to hear about these professional golf management schools. I'd heard about one in Pinehurst. And I said, you know, there's these schools you can go, you get a business degree. And she's like, well, let's look into that. And then she figured out I was just smart enough to get into Campbell, which is this small school. still, you know, it's a D1 school. And that's the path I went. And I never looked back. So when we had that health scare that I just talked about in 2018 with my wife, usually in the winter, I'd be traveling with members or going someplace warm and moving around. And that shook her up, and rightly so. I mean, it took her a while to kind of accept that going on blood thinners, that she was going to have another clot and that she would wake up tomorrow. I mean, that takes time. And she said, you know, could just stay close to home this winter. And, you know, it mean a lot to me. And so that winter, I was just looking for something to do. So I went out and got a drawing board, and I started drawing the map for Marion Golf Club in Philadelphia, which is where I was an assistant. I was just trying to replicate it. I kind of had Google Maps, and I was just trying to replicate it and just draw. And then I had all this white space that I started kind of drawing the history, you know, U.S. Open Trophy, U.S. Amateur Trophy, Walker Cup, et cetera. And if it was any good, I was just going to give it to the pro. It was just something to kill time because I'm either reading or doing something else. I don't watch a lot of TV except for hockey. And I got to a place where I showed it to the pro at Pebble Beach, who was a Marion member, and showed it to John. And you know, I said, what do you think of this? He's like, that's all right. He's like, look, if you're just looking for something to keep you busy, why don't you draw something for us? We got the U.S. Open next summer. And so I went out and got a better drafting board. And I remember coming home, my wife's like, what are you doing? I said, I can do this better than I'm doing now.
Staying close to home, babe.
That's it. I'm just taking the doctor's orders. But I remember she's kind of looking at me. She's like, zero money, do what you want to do. But I It's like, I can do this better. So I drew this map. It was better than the first one, but still I look at it now and I'm like, we were talking before we got on here about handicaps. You know, I'm still like a 35 handicap, right? So I'm doing it better. And as a part of the piece, I'd drawn the past logos for when they had the US Open, like, you know, from 72 and 82 and 92. So I did the logos and that was fun. And it was just it was an escape for me in the winter. It was just you know, kids would go to bed and I would just draw. Sometimes I'd stay up till 2 in the morning.
It's not 45 like it is today. Yeah, right. It's like cold.
So I just got lost in the process of just drawing, and I wasn't tracing anything. I would just kind of use an architecture background of measuring and you know, looking at it with my eye and just trying to pull it down and do it the best I could. It was for me. It wasn't for anybody else. It was just killing time. So that would have been 2019. About February, March, I had some time left in winter, and I kind of had this vision of, I talk about the history of golf all the time, especially when you're a place like Hazeltine. They've had the range of these majors from the US Open, PGA, Ryder Cup, and USAM, and everything else. And I wanted to draw the history of the US Open. I would have people like you in my office all the time. We'd be talking about, where are you from and where have you been and where do you want to go and who's your favorite player? And I wanted to have quick reference, kind of like Wikipedia on my wall. So I just laid it out. I drew all the logos of the clubs from the US Open and the champions and their scores underneath. And again, it was for me. A friend of mine named Tom Coyne, as an author, I was going around USA in 2019 on this trip for his book, A Course Called America. And he was going to play all the US Open courses. And I kind of showed to him and I said, look, take it around with you. Just give it away to the people who host you at these clubs and just have fun with it. I can't sell this, but we can give it away. So Tom took it and it ended up being like the greatest accidental marketing tour that we could have ever had. It was, people started calling me being like, I love it. Where do I buy it? And that was when I was like, you pay money for this? I'm glad you like it, but I can't sell it. I can give it away. But you know, with all these logos on it, I can't sell this.
Oh yeah, proprietary stuff. You can't just
intellectual property, all that, right? So it was never a business plan. You know, it was just this big accident born out of a near tragedy in our family that unearthed a little bit of what I wanted to be as a kid and combined it with something that I'm passionate about now with golf and history. And that's where it started.
Yeah. You said it before because we were talking about some other stuff, but like my friend Michael Jordan with Unreal, I think his kind of started in his mom's basement type deal. He was, I think it was actually jerseys for his softball team at Mankato. And then it's like, oh, man, I can kind of design some cool shirts. And then here he is today, right? Andy and I met in the airport and kind of recognized each other from Winsong, sat down, had a Diet Coke, and the podcast was born. Like, it's just crazy how, you know, like you said, things kind of happen by accident. That's half of life. It's just kind of luck and where you are at the right time, and all of a sudden, things happen.
Yeah, yeah, golf. I think most stories, and you're in the podcast world, and you ask people, how do things start? I think you'll find the commonalities are accidental, luck, timing.
Yeah.
And then they did something well, right? They did something well that other people appreciated and wanted, and momentum goes from there. But I remember kind of pitching to my wife after we left Hazeltine because we're trying to figure out what the next road was. And an article came out in Golf Digest about what I was doing, and it was kind of a nudge in this direction. And I remember getting to the point where I felt the courage to kind of say to her, I was like, I think this is it.
Yeah, so is that it had to be the article I read then about, you know, you were the pro at Hazeltine, kind of goes through a little story of it. So, I mean, what happens after that? Like, are you actually selling them now? And is it a, I don't want to say legitimate business, but it's not just like you're drawing at home and you're like, you have a way to actually sell some of these things with logos and stuff on there now. So it's the direction you want to go.
Yeah. It's been a journey. I think when I left, I was trying to look at, what do I do well? What else could I do besides this job? What would I enjoy doing? And just trying to get a foot in somewhere. And there were some other things we're chasing. And then that article that came out Christmas Eve 2021, I was helping an author named Shane Ryan write a book on the Ryder Cup. And we kept talking about it. And Shane's like, you know, I sent him the Ryder Cup artwork that I had drawn. I said, you know, if you're going to write a book about the Ryder Cup, you might as well at least have this on your wall. You always have a quick reference on the history of the Ryder Cup. And he didn't open it for a month, but he finally got back to me. He goes, what is this that you just sent me? I said, it's my artwork. I said, I'm sending you my artwork. I drew it. And he said, tell me more about it. And again, that article came out Christmas Eve 2021. And the headline was PGA of America Pro's artwork is golf best kept secret.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one I read.
Yeah, and that's when I started. Like, it wasn't even in our top 50 on like next things that we could do. So, you know, kind of gave my wife the business plan. I said, like, if we can get this thing to happen, then this thing will happen, mm-hmm. and this thing that happened. And to start in golf, the great thing that I had was relationships with a lot of the pros that were on the artwork. So if we looked at the U.S. Open artwork, the USGA was like, look, we love it, but all those club logos don't belong to us. So you have to go to every club and get permission, right? So there's two roads here, Jordan, right? There's the, we don't ask anyone for permission and we just try to sell as many of these as we can.
Ask for forgiveness. Yeah. Don't ask for permission.
Yeah. But in golf, that's a death sentence, right? I mean, we play a game where we call the rules and penalties on ourselves when no one's looking. So, and I mean, these are all my friends. I'm not going to steal from them.
Yeah.
But there's also the danger of if we go ask for permission and two or three of these clubs say no, then pack it up, we're done. But that was the putt that we had to hit. We had to find out. So in July of 22, we started that process of just knocking on every door, doing a lot of Zoom calls. Here's who I am. Here's what this is. Here's how it began. Here's what it is. And here's how this works. You know, if you see this as a win for you, then we can move forward. There's 51 clubs on the U.S. Open. It took us 8 months.
Wow.
Yep. And I'd say
just for the U.S. Open.
Just for the U.S. Open. I would tell you 99% of the time, I'm like, we're not going to pull this off. It's going to fall apart tomorrow. But when I look at that artwork now, all I see are like the faces of all the people who helped. And it's, you know, it's well over like 300 to 400 people that got involved. It never been done before. But its momentum kind of carried it. We got it across the finish line. So we launched the U.S. Open artwork in December of 22. We were able to get the PGA Championship done shortly after, Ryder Cup shortly after. And we went through last year with those three. And we're working on the Open Championship right now. We're getting close. We'll see if we get that one across the finish line. And then
there's got to be a joke about the Masters in there somewhere.
Well, I mean, Augusta's always last, right? Some people were like, you know, have you talked to Augusta yet? I'm like, look, they'll call us, not the other way around. Yeah. And luckily, I know the pro. Like, he knows what I'm doing. He's the pro at Inverness in Ohio in the summer where they're on the U.S. Open and the PGA. We're like, he knows what I'm doing. But let's try to get the other four first, and then let's, if Gus never happens, that's gravy,
yeah.
Right? But in the original business plan, it was, let's try to get going in golf. And then I had some vision for the NHL and the NFL and MLB and English Premiership and some other things that we can do.
Kind of like stuff with like Super Bowl all the, like the logos and all those types of things.
There's a long runway. We had already gotten calls from people in MLB and NFL. Can you do this or that? And I'm like, yeah, well, I want to do all of it. It just takes time. So we're 2 years into it and it's got a shot. Yeah. I think, you know, if I were to compare notes to where Michael Jordan with Unreal is after 2 years, it's, you should know whether it's, I kind of go back to what my wife said to me. She's like, look, I see it. You've got a year or two to make this work and we'll know after a year or two, like, yeah, if this has got a chance. So we're starting with the artwork, but what I've tried to tell most people is don't look at me as an artist who happens to tell stories. It's actually the other way around. You know, as a golf professional for years, I was a storyteller / historian. I just happened to be able to draw pretty well too. So we want to get into the storytelling component. Not so much, I don't know if you have about the podcast space that you're in, but I really enjoy engaging people in person with what are these value-based stories and what have I learned about myself and others through this whole journey that we've been on. And I just want to use the artwork as a way of kind of getting to the microphone and coming along people, figuring out where they are and how can we help them make the right decisions. I think I have perspective given what I've gone through for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. Andy, one of the co-hosts, is not here today, but he talks about that a lot just because of his personal, journey. And it's interesting how you phrase that, meaning like we don't tell the stories, kind of like the stories tell us a little bit, and whether it's golf or anything in life, but for us, especially being a golf podcast, there are so many things that you can draw between the sport of golf and life, right? Like you said, kind of holding yourself accountable, calling penalties on yourself. You know, we always talk about how like you can find out a lot about somebody 4 hours on the golf course.
It's the great,
you
know, character reveal.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of character is that person? Can you hold a conversation with them or not? Like, are they a competitor? Are they a little more laid back? Whatever it might be, everyone's got their own thing, but golf like brings that out in people. And it's really just cool to see that kind of flow throughout everything else in life. And this is obviously a great example. Can we open this up?
Sure.
I just you told me you brought a gift, but too, it'd be cool to actually see it. So is every single one hand drawn?
It is.
So how do you scale that? You want to start scaling.
So these are all prints.
Okay. Right. So they are prints. Yep. So you hand draw the original.
Yep.
Wow. And I get to keep this?
This is yours.
Where should I put it in here?
Knock flags off the wall or do something.
So this is a print, but you hand draw it first. So I'll have to hold this up. You can see the detail, right? Like it's beautiful. So you draw this and then what, you take a copy of it? And then they print it somehow and it kind of keeps that, like you can tell, you know, this actually looks like a pencil.
Yep.
This is.
Yep. So it's we draw it all. There's original artwork. When you draw it,
I'm going to hold it up to the camera. You talk about it
right ahead. But everything on there is drawn by hand. Nothing's traced. You know, if you go on my Instagram, you'll see time lapses of me drawing a lot of these. So I use compasses and straight edges. But a lot of it's just kind of looking at the logo and trying to freehand it and bring it down and recreate the best of our ability. But logos they unlock a lot of memories for people. They're connecting in a way. I think if you ever walk through an airport with a logo on and somebody stops you and it's like, hey, you know, have you been to St. Andrews? You know, Jordan, you're wearing a Mets hat today. Like, you know, tell me what's the connection and the why. But logos do that. And I think what we discovered through all this, Jordan, was, yeah, the logos are great. It's kind of like having a logo ball collection on your wall. But what I found, because I had it up in my office for my last 2 years at Hazeltine, was just it started so many conversations. People would just kind of walk in and they point to something. And it
what's Solana?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
tell me about you. What can I unlock? You know, who are you and where are you from? And what's your story? What's your connection to golf? And what do you love? And I was listening to the episode you had with Jamie Rue, where you guys were just talking about where are places that you've been that were great.
Oh yeah. What makes a great country club and why? Yeah.
Right. And there's, everyone has a different experience and relationship with that. But I think what we just found with this was one, there was a white space in the golf art world where if I went to a championship, your options were you buy a flag, which is not broken, never will be. I have plenty of flags.
Yeah.
In my,
I have too many clearly, as you can see. And I do try and make them personal. As you can see a couple, I'll have either people sign it or write a note so I can remember kind of the experience, you know, and then people are just like, oh, who is that? Oh, I know Ryan, or oh, I know whatever. Like, yeah, it makes it a little bit more personable.
It's a story, right? And the logos on the flags unlock those stories. And where have you been? And what have your experiences been? And where are you going? And I think that's what we accidentally kind of ran into with this artwork across the majors that we've done so far is just, it gets people talking about golf, which is a good thing. That's all I want to do is just get people talking and connecting with others. So, you know, we call it the conversation starter. When people come into your home or office and they just see it, you're likely going to overlap on something.
Yeah.
And then 3 hours later, you've talked about golf, and that's what I'm trying to accomplish.
Well, so on the topic of talking about golf, we got into it a little bit when you came in, but now that you're kind of stepping away from being a professional and obviously you're still doing the artwork stuff, but how's golf right now? To the outside world, it's really funny. I think people see golf growing. They see sports in the best place it's ever been. Then you throw live into the equation. I would garner to say, if you talk to most folks that have been playing golf for a long time, they don't want to grow the game anymore. They want to shrink the game, right? Because there's so many people playing. It's starting to get a lot more expensive. I'm just curious, you know, you've been in the industry for a long time. Where's your head at and where's golf and what's it going to take to keep the sport continuing to grow, but growing in the way that keeps it what it is, which is that, you know, when people start to play and the reason they get so addicted is because I think they see the competitive nature, but they also see that kind of, you know, being out in the world, doing something outside with friends, the camaraderie, you know, all the things that make it great other than just the 18 holes that you play. How does golf do that? And what do you see in the sport right now?
I'll go back to what got me into golf. I'd never seen golf at all before until I was on spring break in 1992 on Hilton Head Island, staying on Harbortown the week of the PGA Tour. And it was going on in the backyard of the house we were staying at, and my cousins were into golf, and they got me to go out and watch golf. And we watched guys hit drivers. This was back when metal was just starting to come into the game, and he had persimmon drivers. And to watch these guys hit drives 2-3 football fields away, it was like, it just captures you. I want to do that. I came home from that trip going like, I want to learn how to play that game. So knowing that that's what got it for me to where we are today, I think, look, money is the great disruption in anything in life, not just in sports, but especially right now in sports. When you have a group come along with a bottomless pit of money, it forced a lot of people to make decisions about what's most important to you. And the way I look at it now is like, look, I don't have any judgment for whichever way players went, but the fans, as a fan of the game, you divided the field in half. And now we're really struggling because we talked about before we came on, like I didn't even watch a shot at Torrey Pines. I haven't watched a shot in Maui, you know, or Amex, even though Nick Dunlap won. Like I got tired of hearing about how much money like they're making. Like you go into the FedEx Cup playoffs, it's like, well, Victor Hovland's going to play for 25. I don't care.
Victor Hovland made $20,000 per stroke he had on the PGA tours. Yeah.
That doesn't mean anything to me as the viewer.
Yeah.
You know, what are the character stories? Like, who is this person? How are they overcoming something? Where are the rivalries that we had, like Tiger and Phil for years? There's no storyline because you took a lot of like the villains and you put them on one side and you've got a bunch of really nice guys on this side and there's no storyline. So I think, you know, professional golf drives a lot of interest in the game, specifically in our country. I mean, look, when Tiger came along, I was 21 years old. Like I watched the boom. When you have a player like that, and now the PGA Tour doesn't have a captivating player like that. That's a once-in-a-generation type player. But again, money is a big disruption. What does that mean for the fans? And for me, as somebody who loves the game of golf, that I'm not watching golf on a weekly basis, then where are we going? And as much as people would say, like, well, so that's great. The players are in a better place. They're making more money, and that's great. But I think Jeff Ogilvy said it best. He's like, look, I think for what we get paid to hit a white ball around in grass, it's a pretty good deal. Have we gotten sports so out of perspective where it should be? You know, I go back to, as a hockey fan in the summer on NHL Network, they used to show the Raising the Cup games, and the Islanders beat the North Stars in 1982. This is back when the glass and the boards were like this high, and they 3-2.
They didn't have nets up, they didn't have yeah.
So, you know, the game ended, though, and the fans would just crawl over the boards. They'd run on the ice. They'd pat the players in the back. They'd hug them. Players would hug the fans. And I'm like, look at that. Like, why was that the way it was? And why will we never, ever get back to it? And the difference was, in 1982, the guy who won the Stanley Cup made the same money as you. He just happened to win the Stanley Cup. He was your next-door neighbor. He never lived above you. But now, like, there's a line between the fans and the players, and it's getting bigger by the day. And I just wonder, like, how much more out of touch we're going to get with this. And then, you know, trickle down effect, you could really get me started about all this stuff, but then you go to NIL and what that means for collegiate athletes and high school athletes. And it's like, man, like, are we losing the love of the game a little bit here, you know, for the dollar and the Instagram, like, and the NIL deal. And that's why when I recognize you still see players out there that genuinely love the game, that's what I think Max Homa resonates so well with everyone. He goes, like, you can't buy my dream. Like, I'm going to play for this dream and the money's going to come along, but like, that's not what my dream is.
Yeah. It's difficult too, right? Because there are guys like Dustin Johnson, who's very open about, like, and Cam Smith. I don't particularly enjoy golf, right? I'm really good at it and I know I'm really good at it and I do it for a job. I like to fish or I like to do whatever. Right. And so it's difficult when, like you said, you have to draw that line between, you know, sport and maybe making a living or what somebody does, you know, that's not at the level of a Dustin Johnson or Cam Smith and is quite literally, you know, playing 30, 40 tournaments, whatever it might be, to provide for their family. Right. Like, it is a really difficult thing to kind of comprehend. And the one thing I always kind of lean on or go back to that I have loved over the past couple of years is stuff like this. I think just social media and the world of bringing players and personalities closer to home, I think has been awesome. You know, we talked about Bob Does Sports early on. I mean, this is just a normal, funny dude, like you said, that just probably that guy that's life at the party everyone loves and is hilarious. I don't think the guy can break 90 very often, but he's out there playing with John Rahm and Steph Curry and those guys and are all out there. And I think what you do start to realize at the end of the day, and you know, if you're fortunate enough to be ever to be able to play a place like Whisper Rock or one of those places where you walk in and Max Homa's there, Hadwin's there, whoever is there, and they're just playing in their Wednesday game. Like they are just, you know, one of the guys or gals playing golf for fun because they love it. And I do think that that's the thing that makes golf so beautiful, because I could never just show up to an open gym and play basketball with LeBron James. Yeah. But I could show up to a golf course and, you know, I got a handicap and I could at least, you know, play Homa for strokes or something, right? Like it is kind of amazing in that sense. And I think it's something that has brought people to the sport a lot faster than a lot of other sports out there.
Yeah. Look, it's when I got right up to the gallery rope and that guy was hitting the driver 5 feet away from me, like never had a ticket.
You were like that dude with the Mick Ultra behind. Yeah. I think he was, I don't know who he was. It might've been Tiger. He was watching, he's just standing there just in awe.
Yeah. I think, and look, you get me started on like being in the present and watching it. Like I was on the 18th green in 1999 at Pinehurst when Payne Stewart made the putt. Like I don't have it on my phone. Like I don't need it. You can YouTube it whenever you want, but I'll always be able to tell you about that moment and what it was like. And I try to remind people. I'm like, tell me what you saw. Don't show me. Tell me what you saw. Describe it for me. You have to be in the moment to be able to describe it. And I think that's the beauty of kind of going to some of these sports. But to your point, like golf gets you up close and personal in a way that it's tougher in other sports. You know, if you had an upper deck seat for the Vikings game, like ants run around the field, right? But in golf, you can get close to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's even hilarious. So I've been going to the Waste Management now for 5 years, 4 or 5 years in a row. And I've only been to the 16th hole once, right? Like the Waste Management, in my opinion, is one of the best sporting events out there, not just like in golf. Like I think it's one of the best out there. And I think it's whenever I go, I'm always amazed at, I don't know how many people walk through those doors in a day, probably 200,000. If I had to guess.
Six figures. Yeah.
Yeah. 200,000. I bet 150,000 of them are between holes 16 through 18.
Yeah.
And we go to the first tee at like 8 a.m. and we're watching like Nick Hardy tee off or something and there's nobody there. And it's just, it's hilarious to me how you can watch some of the best players in the world at their sport on any given, you know, Friday, Saturday, and be 10 feet away from them with a $20 pass in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, like that, it blows my mind. It is really cool.
I think the next thing that was happening, we were on a really good path. Was I think the full swing show for what that did for people to watch and understand a guy like Sahith Theegala, like what his journey has been like, and the emotion that you get from him when he's close to winning and then didn't, like, that's not going to happen on Live. You're not going to cry your eyes out because he didn't win on Live because you still have a paycheck coming.
Like, yeah.
I think that's what's set our sport apart for so many years was like, you had to earn it. I mean, we're talking about when Payne Stewart came out on the tour in the 80s, he had to go through Monday qualifiers just to play every week, even though he had a tour card. Like that grind and that perseverance, I think, is the thing that we just want to see. We want to root for people like that, you know, or Tony Finau and what he's going through, like tugging a family of five around, you know, and what Matt Fitzpatrick is going through. We got to see their personalities. We're heading down a good road, and then we've had this great disruption that I don't know how we put it back together, and I don't know how that impacts the sport, but it just feels like to me that the danger I see is it's becoming so unrelatable to the people that you depend upon to watch it, and that's tough.
Yeah, it is tough. And I mean, I always try and see both sides of it. And I think people like yourselves, and I wouldn't call it your, can I ask how old you are?
45.
Okay. Yeah. You're in your 40s. I mean, I'm 32. So it's not like we're 30 years apart from each other. Right. But like 10 years, 20 years in the sport of golf feels like almost 50 years. Yeah. Because the people that have been around it, you know, that 10 years longer than people that maybe just getting into it now, have really seen an evolution of the game, not only from like the equipment and the types of athletes that are playing, but you know, the difficulty and the courses and like you said, the money flowing in. And when I look at it, I can't relate to the things, you know, 20 years ago, cause I wasn't interested in the sport. You know, Tiger Woods is who got me into the sport. Right. And then what kept me watching was me starting to play and starting to have an appreciation for how difficult it is. And then to see people make the sport look so easy, like that's what kept me coming back.
Yeah.
And so it's harder for me to take a look at like, you know, all those aspects that go into it that I think kind of the normal fan doesn't really probably understand what a Monday qualifier yeah. might be, or how hard it is to get your tour cards. Like, oh, they don't just go to college and they're on tour. And it's like, no, yeah. I mean, there are probably thousands, if not tens of thousands of collegiate golfers out there, and less than 0.5% might sniff a Korn Ferry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think people just don't really have an appreciation unless you're in the sport and understand that for how difficult it is to get to that level. And then kind of like we were talking about before, you know, somebody you've never heard of now can go out and win a tournament, and you've never even heard of that individual because you have no idea where they went to college. You have no idea like where they came from, and all of a sudden they're winning at Torrey Pines. Right? Like all respect to, I think it's Pavin or Pavan.
Yeah.
I only know that because I was watching, so I was rooting for Højgaard. And what a shot he up and down to make that birdie was unbelievable. But that's a guy that we've never heard of before,
yeah.
you know? And so I think that that is an interesting dynamic of the sport that some people love and some people may not like. You know, you'd rather be seeing the leaderboard be kind of the top 10, 15 players, and it's not like that all the time.
Well, sports will give you stories. I mean, look at last night. You got Brock Purdy, last player drafted in the NFL, playing against the number one pick.
Yeah.
Right? So sports doesn't know who's throwing the ball or who's hitting the ball. You do it well enough. You know, but I think that's what's been the great carrot with golf is like, you don't care where you came from, how long you've been playing. You hit this ball the fewest amount of times. Like, you're going to keep moving on.
Yeah.
And, I'd love to see us get back to that. You look at both sides, like Liv has, I think there's something to the team component.
I really do.
There's something to have an attachment to teams and what they're trying to do with this PGL, where you had the Boston team and you had the Chicago team, you had teams attached to cities. I think that's what makes the Ryder Cup unique, is like, we're all rooting for the same team, right? Whereas, you know,
and the guys on the teams are for the same teams, right? They might not like each other, but playing for the same thing.
And the cheers get louder, but like the team component, like there's something there that they just need to figure it out. But who's going to be the people that can come to the table and be like, can we all just put our guns down here for a little bit and find a way forward together? I think you're going to see a world tour by 25 or 26.
Think so.
A world tour with like the top 80 to 100 guys.
So you don't think it'll be PGA, LIV, DP, it'll just be one massive tour?
One for the top 100 players, one world tour. They'll play 6 or 7 times in the States, you know, Middle East, Dubai, Europe, Australia. But those events will mean something when they play. So they'll play 12 of those plus majors, 16 events out of like 52 weeks. Like, we don't need PGA Tour every week.
Yeah.
We don't. Like,
it'd be great if like some of the events that you watch in the week were to get to the world tour or PGA Tour, wherever it might be, and start to see some of those, you know, guys, gals that are grinding to get to that next stage. Kind of like how we watch college football in the NFL, right? Like, because then when people get to the NFL, you remember that, you know, play that Jadeveon Clowney made on South Carolina in the backfield against Michigan, right? Then all of a sudden you're seeing him play on Sunday, like, oh man, I remember that guy. Like, I know who that is.
Yep.
And that's what brings you closer to the sport, the players, and everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Chandler, this is fun. It's flown by. I would love to have you on again. I know
it
sounds like you're going to be doing a little bit more with the artwork. I appreciate the gift. I'm going to have to owe you something back now.
Oh, whatever.
I'm not really too into artwork. I'm sure I can figure something out.
Attaboy.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming in person too. Yeah, it means a lot.
Anytime. Come back anytime, but nice being with you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.